Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
This ball is hooking and it hits the foul pole. It's a home run. You can pucker up and kiss that baby goodbye. Off the right field foul pole, Cade Beloso with one swing brings the Tigers back into this game. The hometowner gets it done.
Despite the best efforts of Cade Beloso, though, it wasn't enough. As LSU falls to UL. That's right, the Raging Cajuns pull out the 6-5 win over the Tigers in the Wally Poniff Jr. Classic there at the Shrine on Airline last night. Welcome to a hump day edition of RP3 in Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We get a jam-packed three-hour edition of the show today. We'll talk a little bit about the NFL. We'll be releasing its schedule tonight. That's right, we find out exactly how the Saints schedule is going to play out. That way you can make all your plans for the fall. We'll recap Raging Cajun softball, picking up yet another win, this time at UNC Greensboro last night. We'll have the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, coming on in the second hour. Third hour, Marlon Favorite, former Saints and LSU player and friend of the show. And we'll also have Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South breaking down, recapping all of the big storylines coming out of spring football. But we're going to start off the show with the Wally Poniff Jr. Classic. Two teams that have been struggling. We talked about it on yesterday's show. LSU last week losing to Southern and then dropping 2 of 3 at Mizzou. UL losing to McNeese and La Tech last week during the midweek, but was able to salvage a series win over South Al. The Cajuns started off fairly strong yesterday. If you take away the Todd Peterson first inning, where he just went like through 7 pitches. That was it. Todd Peterson goes out there for LSU. Closer, former closer for the Tigers. He gets the start. He just 1-2-3, just right out there. We knew this was going to be a game that was going to feature about 12.7 million different pitchers. LSU banged up, minus a couple of key everyday players. Their pitching staff is banged up even worse. Cajuns are dealing with some injuries as well. But at the end of the day, 6-5 win for the Cajuns, who improved to 20-20 overall on the season. LSU, meanwhile, drops to 24-14. LSU does return to action, beginning with a 3-game set this Thursday at the Box against Florida. You can listen to all three of those games live right here on 103.7 The Game. Jacob Schultz picked up the win for the Cajuns. He's now 4-1 on the year. He threw 3 shutout innings. The big righty only gave up 1 hit, struck out 2. The Cajuns started the game with Logan Savoy, and then Connor Cook followed him. Those two guys combined for 5 innings, allowing 5 runs, 3 earned, on 7 hits, walking 1 and striking out 2. They're the ones that got teed up by Beloso. Vitmeyer was charged with the loss for LSU after tossing two innings. The sophomore gave up three runs on four hits and struck out two. Now, once again, LSU was limited tonight with the pitching staff and available position players due to injuries. And was also shortened because of the Florida series. That said, this was very much a back-and-forth game. In the top of the second, Hunter Castles and left fielder Daniel LaHare were on first and second after consecutive walks. Once again, Todd Peterson pitched the first inning. He was gone after the first inning. Paul Maneri mentioned that he was going to use as many pitchers as possible. This was going to be, you know, pitching by committee approach. But after those back-to-back walks, right fielder Oren Vaughn singled up the middle to bring in Castles. And then after Vaughn stole second to put runners in scoring position, first baseman and first ballot Hall of Famer for name, Hanson Monica, hit a sac fly to center field, which brought LaHare home to give the Cajuns a quick 2-0 lead. Then in the top of the third, former STM star and LSU player, who's transferred to the Cajuns, led off the top of the third with a walk. He moved all the way to third on a single to right center by Castles before scoring on a double steal. A Tony Robichaux. He likes pulling out those double steals now. That's that little thing in his back pocket he likes to pull out. Double steal time! UL put him up 3-0. But you're like, okay, the Cajuns got something going. They're pitching okay. They're getting their bats together. They got all the momentum. LSU's vulnerable because they're banged up with all the position players out. And their pitching staff is going to be pitching by committee, and their best pitchers, hell, their second-tier pitchers are not even pitching in this game because they need them for the weekend series because they're banged up. But then the freshman first baseman for LSU, Cade Beloso, stepped to the plate. And that three-run blast, man, it hit the right foul pole. Just ding. That was his fifth homer of the season. That scored former Lafayette High star Antoine Duplantis and left fielder Daniel Cabrera, who played in the game, still coming back from that injury. Beloso tied his career high in RBIs with four in the contest because he got the game tying. He tied the game again later with this. When he hit a RBI single later in the game.
2-3. Beloso strikes this one well to right field. Vaughn comes up throwing. Safe at the plate.
I thought there was a chance when he came up like that that he was going to be able to get him.
If that throw was 85% accurate, if the throw would have been 95% accurate, he might have been out last.
He might have been out, yeah.
It would have been one of those. If this was Major League Baseball 20 years ago, the catcher would have got blown up right there and nobody would have said anything.
You're right.
20 years ago.
So Beloso had himself a hell of a day there. The career high in RBIs with four. Also, he did that against Southern back on February 27th at the box. But then came the eighth inning, and the Cajuns stepped up big when they needed to. Vaughn hit a two-run blast to left field. There was no question when he hit that, right?
I still never saw where it landed. I've been to the Shrine on Airline a handful of times for different whatever games, and I feel like this one made it to the parking lot. Like, you know how the parking lot is kind of right over that left field wall? I feel like this one ended up in the parking lot. Like, I'm not certain because it was dark, but man.
He crushed that, dude. He just crushed it.
I believe the term is mammoth shot or rainmaker.
He hit that one over the left field wall with one out. Castles was on base. He had reached on a leadoff single. And then came Hanson Monica to the plate. followed right with another home run, this one over the left field wall as well. Solo shot. Because here's the funny thing. Veyon's home run tied with him with Monica for the most on the team with 10.
Most in the conference, too.
Most in the conference. And then Hansom's like, no. None of that. We can be tied for as long as it takes you to trot around the bases. When you come home and you go sit down on the bench after I give you a high five and maybe a slap on the butt, I'm going to step up and I'm going to drill my home run to retake the lead. Like we said, Todd Peterson did start the game for the Tigers. He blanked the Cajuns in the one inning. Clay Moffitt and Aaron George, they shut out the Cajuns over two innings and only walked one. Freshman Riggs Threadgill made his first appearance since March 13th and threw one inning, struck out one, and gave up one hit. Where things went awry for the Tigers was when Chase Costello and Will Rapole, is that how we're saying his name?
That's how Lynn Rollins was saying it, Rapole.
Lynn Rollins is a Hall of Famer. Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. I trust Lynn Rollins. They combined for three innings, allowing the three runs on two hits, walked four, and struck out one. So what were your thoughts from the game there, Cody? I mean, look, we knew what was happening. Both teams are banged up. Both teams were going to take a committee to pitching. No one was going to stay in the game very long, and we know LSU was shorthanded. But as a diehard LSU fan, your thoughts from losing to the Raging Cajuns there at the Shrine?
As an LSU fan, but an alumni of UL, last night was pretty fun for me. I always forget that you're there. It was just a good baseball game, I think. I mean, there was, you know, the LSU side of me looks back at the Costello inning and it just, you know, he struggled and Rapole came in and he kind of, at first before he got his feeding in his second inning, he kind of labored a little bit, but it was one of those ones where there were home runs, there was back-to-back shots from the Cajuns, Beloso going deep off the foul pole. There was a lot of action. UL, despite, you know, not getting to that six-run mark until late in the game, they had runners on base. It seemed like the first batter in every single half inning they were at the plate, their first batter would get on base, which that always makes for a more exciting inning or at least a more suspenseful inning. It was one of those baseball games that nine runs crossed the plate, or 11 runs crossed the plate in total, excuse me, but it was fun. It went by quickly. It didn't feel like one of those that drug out, all these guys are scoring a bunch of runs and we're here for 4 hours. I don't know. It was, and maybe some of that has to do with the ambiance. You know, you get the innings where Skip is in the box and he's doing his interviews with the guy. And then you've got Wally Poniff Sr. is in the booth. He's doing it. So, I mean, there's some of the ambiance that goes along with the game that probably helped that. But, I mean, I don't know. Can you ask for more than a 6-5 ball game in a minor league park? You know, I don't know. Last night was fun for me, so I'm not mad.
With home runs too, you had the crowd pleasing hits.
Right, I'm not mad at anything that happened last night. I mean, yeah, of course, I probably would have maybe liked to see LSU win, but this could be one of those wins for the Cajuns that you know. I mean, it's like you said, was this their last midweek game, or they have one more midweek?
They have the one more midweek game coming up, and that's going to be at Southern Miss, and then that's it.
So there you go. I mean, what? What better time than now to flip that switch, so to speak, with air quotes, and get it done? Because last night was a baseball game. Nobody handed anyone the game. It's not like LSU said, here you go, Cajuns, take this, or vice versa. No. Whoever won that game last night and ended up being the Cajuns, they went out and they took that game. And that was fun for me to watch. So no complaints here.
Third straight win for the Cajuns over LSU. Back-to-back wins in the Wally Poniff Classic over LSU for the Cajuns. Sandwich in between is that thrilling extra inning affair that I saw last year at Russo Park that the Cajuns pulled out the win. Also, LSU, how weird is this going to be? LSU's a top 25 team and a contender to reach the College World Series, yet they have no bragging rights when it comes to the state of Louisiana. They've lost to McNeese, Southern, Northwestern State, and UL. So, on that level, they can't beat the teams in their own state, but they may win a College World Series championship. The mystique of the midweek game. When we come back right here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk more about the Poniff Junior Classic right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. More Wally Pauniff Jr. Classic talk is needed, not only for ourselves, but for you, the listener. Cody, can we just talk about, as someone, you can bring a great perspective to this as a lifelong, diehard LSU fan, but also as a UL grad.
That is correct.
I think you can appreciate the little bit of the shade thrown by the two media departments for each athletic department. Because
that little back and forth there that they have with each other is my Terrell Owens. I'm just going to sit here and I'm just going to read as many things I can. And if I dare, if I'm feeling froggy, and this is a rare occurrence that I am, but, you know, let's say, you know, maybe I've drank a few cold Pepsis on a Friday night or something like that, and I'm just hanging out. Dare I sometimes venture to the comment section of certain posts, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, doesn't matter. If you venture to the comment section, it gets even better because those people in the comment section,
all the message board folks,
aren't affiliated with the school. Their paychecks aren't signed by the school, so they really just—I mean, it's actually died down here recently because I think both schools are in a bit of a plateau or a valley, if I can, in the land of peaks and valleys. I think both schools kind of right now are valleying rather than peaking.
I would agree with that.
So I think both schools are kind of laying low. As it were, as far as that goes, but I don't think that means that everybody's keeping their mouth shut.
Well, it's just very subtle, the shade that's thrown.
Not if you know where to look.
But if you know where you look. So for me, of course, I notice it right off the bat. So let's say UL's release about the game. Clean copy, straight to the point, highlights their guys. That's
facts.
What it should do. Right? But there's just this very subtle thing that's in there. Nowhere in this game story that was set out by UL does it mention an LSU player by name. Now, mind you, this is a 6-5 game, which means LSU scored 5 runs.
Right.
Okay. In the release, it doesn't mention the LSU players by name. And the only mention of LSU scoring is the lead lasted until the fourth inning when one swing of the bat from Louisiana State's first baseman sent a ball over the right field wall.
And that's
very subtle. First of all, I respect it. I respect the hell out of it because LSU does the same thing, right? On the broadcast, what did they say? I heard it yesterday on 103.7 The Game.
I don't know. I feel like Ronnie Rance stuck a lot with the UL. I think he just stayed right there, which is a safe zone for people that don't want to. That are not trying to pick a side, you know what I mean? Because Ronnie Rance, he coaches a select team in the state. He knows a lot of kids that play baseball for a lot of these different schools. So he's the guy that he's stuck with the UL, I felt like. Lynn Rollins is steadfast Louisiana's Raging Cajuns. Because he was even doing Louisiana's Raging Cajuns and LSU's Tigers. And it was hitting the ear
when you heard
LSU's
Tigers.
I was like, I get it. It makes sense, I guess, possession, but whatever. So that's where I felt Lynn State. But Skip Bertman, he didn't care.
He did not care.
He's not worried about it.
No, old Skip. Skip said, no.
UL out there.
Yeah.
Tony Robichaud's a great man, good coach.
He sounds like when Kermit the Frog grew up.
But he kept going, like, Skip refuses to say it. The voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, when you heard him on the broadcast yesterday right here on 103.7 The Game, there was a Lafayette thrown in there.
Mm.
Okay. So in their release too, they're not referring to UL.
I wonder if that's a normal deal though. If I were to grab not a weekend release, because I would guarantee a weekend release, there's somebody that's like, you know, full time working on those types of things, right? But I would wonder if I were go back and to look at a different weekday game release, you know, McNeese or Nichols, or pick another game, doesn't matter, but when they lost, like Northwestern State or something like that, and I would wonder if the names of the kids pop up in that one, like if LSU name the kids from Northwestern when they beat them.
Well, I mean, LSU did mention the kids from UL in their release.
I just okay. So I wonder then. So they were mentioned by name in LSU's release. So that LSU part of throwing shade was just adding the extra L to the end of the name.
Yes,
okay. Fair. I mean, that's what LSU's been doing for a long time. So
but, man,
enough.
I can't tell you how much. And it's such a – but you're right. It's more with the fans. Like, Skip will throw a little shade, you know. And they'll do it in other ways. But, man, people, like, get ready and they want to fight one another over this issue.
It used
to
be worse, in my opinion. Now, I'm not – I don't live in Lafayette, so I don't, you know, maybe it is just as bad. You know, when maybe it was because I was on campus, too, at the time when I was a student, so things maybe seemed a little more hostile.
You noticed it more that way.
But,
I got you.
But, I mean, as far as I can tell, it doesn't seem like it's near as bad. Now, is there any love lost between these two schools? No. They don't, you know. I think there's a respect between the players themselves. But
yes, I would agree with
that. That's not what we're talking about right now.
Well, because most of the players know each other.
Oh, no. I mean, two of the players that played last night wore LSU uniforms at one point.
Correct.
So, I mean, that's – and Tony Robichaux and Paul Maneri, you'll never hear them say a bad word about each other.
Right. There's
but, again, that's not what we're talking about.
Right. There's an immense amount of respect between the players and the coaches for one another. But when it comes to, like, the fan bases, though – Oh man, they get so salty with one another.
And can I say it was cool? I feel like I had heard this before, but just had put it in the back of my mind. So it was nice to be reminded of that last night, that at the beginning of his career, Tony Robichaux, the youngest college baseball coach in the country, was hired at 24 years old.
At McNeese.
Oh my goodness.
Think about that. That
is a career. That's a lifetime in baseball. That is impressive.
And would that even happen these days? You know what I'm saying? Like,
not
being hired at 24 to run to be the head coach? I don't think so.
I'm sure there's a 24-year-old somewhere getting hired that is, but not going to play like Tony Robichaux did.
No.
And he wasn't going to play NAIA baseball. No disrespect to those, because he was playing at McNeese. That was, I'm sure at the time, was still.
Yeah. So, Raging Cajuns get the win. Third straight over LSU, second straight in the Wally Pontiff Classic. They'll return to action this weekend on the road at UT Arlington.
Yeah, Thursday there, too.
Thursday through Saturday as well, because of Easter weekend. LSU comes back home to Alex Bach to host Florida to try to get things back on track. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, it's a little time for some Louisiana wrap-up right here on 103.7 The Game.
It's time for the Louisiana Wrap-Up.
You heard the man, Ray. It's time for the Louisiana Wrap-Up on this hump day edition of RP3 and Company. And we're going to start down south in the Crescent City. Raymond, you got something to tell me about New Orleans. What do you got?
That's right. The Crescent City has not one but two players that were named LSWA Baseball Player of the Week. Mr. Schutz, Tulane third baseman Cody Hoise was honored for the second consecutive week, while UNO pitcher Chris Turpin was awarded for a stellar performance on the mound as they were named by the Louisiana Sports Writers Association the Baseball Players of the Week. Cody from Tulane, third baseman, he only batted .467 last week with three home runs, six RBIs, and 10 runs scored, helping the Green Wave push their winning streak to six games as they swept a conference opponent for the first time since 2017. Turpin, meanwhile, picked up Pitcher of the Week honors, the Belle Chasse native and Holy Cross star, as he was dominant in the Privateers 2-0 win at McNeese in the second game of a doubleheader last Friday, where he struck out only 14 batters. The most by UNO pitcher since Brian Warzak did it last year. It was also the team-leading fourth win of the season, and he lowered his ERA down to under three. So congratulations to the Tulane Green Wave star and the UNO Privateer star for picking up LSWA Player of the Week honors.
Not too shabby. Indeed, those numbers are gaudy, to say the least.
Yeah, a little bit.
Let's take a little trip now. We're going to leave the state itself, but of course, this is the Louisiana Wrap-Up, so we'll always bring it back to the boot. I've never been here before. I've never heard of this place, Raymond. But something happened in Americus, Georgia.
Well, America in Americus, Georgia.
It's America with a U, Americus.
That's right. Georgia Southwestern State University. And you're thinking to yourself, Ray, why the hell we care about Georgia Southwestern
State? GSWU, man. Get with it.
University. Well, you should care about it because a longtime Nicholls State assistant coach and former Nicholls State player has taken over as the head women's basketball coach. But more importantly, right here in Acadiana. Opelousas native and former Opelousas High star Justin Payne was named earlier this week as the head women's basketball coach at GSW. Payne recently completed his eighth season as an assistant women's basketball coach and 10th year overall under head coach Dobie Plaisance at Nicholls State. Payne said this, I want to thank all the people who were part of this process. One thing that was really exciting about when I came on campus a week ago was the family atmosphere from the coaches, from the administration. It was amazing. It was something similar to what we had at Nicholls. We know what that family atmosphere, what it can do. Now, he helped Nicholls last season finish 20-12 overall, 14-4 in the Southland, and they went to the WBI postseason tournament. Payne is a product of Opelousas, and he was a three-year starter at point guard for the Colonels. He lettered in four seasons, and he helped lead the Colonels to a 20-11 record in 08-09. He was just playing like 10 years ago, and now he's already a head coach.
Like, I mean, that's Tony Robichaux status.
Yeah. It was just wow. During his playing career there at Nicholls, the Opelousas native led the Colonels in assists, totaling 329 in his career. But now he gets his first crack at being a head coach there at Georgia Southwestern State University. So congratulations for one of Kenny and his own getting to live out his dream.
Congratulations to him indeed. Americus, Georgia. It seems like a wonderful place to visit. I believe now we need to take a trip back to the Crescent City. Is that where we're headed now, Raymond?
That is correct. And you know what? We're going to go back and talk about our buddy Cody there. From Tulane because...
Oh, I was like, what did I do? This is news to me.
Because not only was he named the LSWA Player of the Week, as the American Athletic Conference Player of the Week. Okay? So he got the AAC honors, and it was for the second time this season and for the second consecutive week that he was named, the junior infielder was named the Conference Player of the Week. It's the fourth honor from the league that he's received this season.
Have a year.
That's quite a year. That's quite a year when you've already been named Player of the Week four times. And that started back in February and March. The Griffith, Indiana native, it's a long way from home to be playing in New Orleans. Once again, like I said earlier, finished the week batting .467 at the plate with six home runs and 10 runs scored. Of his seven hits, he hit three more home runs. Three of those were home runs. To continue to lead the nation in that category, he has 19 on the year.
Tops in the country.
Yeah.
Jeez.
He also added a pair of doubles as he slugged 1.200. So he's having himself a hell of a year. Four times he's been named Conference Player of the Week. He leads the nation in home runs. Green Wave are ascending. The baseball program took a little bit of a dip. They're ascending in the right direction. And by the way, Tulane will be LSU's opponent next season for the Wally Pontiff Classic, replacing UL. Because Tulane, there's some beef with the schedule about the home and away. So that's why they stopped playing Tulane and LSU.
Right.
Well, the way to remedy that is force them to play in the Wally Pontiff Classic.
And I've heard that with the Baby Cakes leaving, whoever or if someone comes in and takes over that stadium with another minor league club or whatever have you, it's not set in stone yet that the Shrine on Airline will be the setting for the Pontiff Classic next season. But Wally Sr. did say that that he's already kind of working on, and that
there's no way that game leaves.
He's hopeful, he said it basically, but he couldn't confirm yesterday that the game would be there again next year.
Even if that place is dormant, let's say they can't get a double A squad in there.
But then somebody's got to pay for upkeep of that stadium all year just for the Pontiff Classic.
That's a huge deal.
I agree. I agree with you.
It would be a bad look. The Metairie and New Orleans, they wouldn't allow that. Someone would step up. Now, it may not be used. Maybe they use it for high schools.
Right. Just have to find a way to make sure it doesn't become run down and unusable.
Yes.
Because of vacancy, if you will. We got one more stop to make on this Louisiana wrap-up.
Oh, that's right. Four City. Oh, it's a four-tripper.
It's a four-tripper. We're not done yet. Yes. Because now we got to head up north. And something went down in Monroe. What happened in Monroe, Ray?
Lane Burroughs.
I recognize that name.
That's right. Former Northwestern State head baseball coach. He's been at La Tech now for a while. Picked up win number 100 on the road as La Tech, and that's a team that's kind of ascending right now as well. They're trending in the right direction. They had some early season struggles, including losing, I want to say, to ULM earlier in the year, but they are heading in the right direction right now because he got his 100th win as the La Tech head coach. He shut out his rival, avenging an earlier season loss. And the Bulldogs also picked up win number 25 on the season with the 5-0 shutout win over the Warhawks. So congratulations to Lane Burroughs and the Louisiana Tech baseball team for a tremendous honor. Now, he's got far more wins than that because of his time spent at Northwestern State, but still, win number 25 on the year. That's a good milestone to hit. Avenge an early season loss against your I-20 rival. Check. And win number 100. So, all in all, a good night for Lane Burroughs and the Bulldogs.
They've been having a pretty good season.
They have
over
been.
There. I have a feeling that they're going to make a regional.
They could. Also, just a reminder that on May 7th, LSU hosts them in a midweek game.
Yeah, that won't be easy.
No, that won't be easy. And that'll be LSU's last opportunity to stake claim to the state's bragging rights.
Oh, that ship sailed.
They beat Southeastern and Nichols.
It's a good ball club, too, Southeastern. Let's not knock them.
Yeah, let's not knock them. Let's not knock them.
I mean, if we check the record right now, the Cajuns may have a claim to the state. Because I think maybe McNeese. I don't know. We'd have to check the records. That's interesting.
When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Raging Cajun softball team still on the road for that North Carolina trip. They ended it with another win over UNC Greensboro. We'll recap that right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We spent majority of this first hour talking Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic, as expected. Once again, UL pulls out the one-run win over LSU. It's the third straight victory for the Cajuns over the Tigers in this series, and the second, or back-to-back victories, at the Wally Pontiff for the Cajuns over the Tigers. We also did a little Louisiana wrap-up as we crisscrossed the state about news pertaining to everyone. But now let's bring it back home, talk more Cajuns, but let's go to the softball team. They had a little bit of a scheduling quirk this year, done so on purpose. Look, making a trip to Boone, North Carolina is not necessarily an easy task by any stretch of the imagination. So what Jerry Glasgow and his staff have done is that when they knew they had to go play at App State this year, they wisely picked up not one but two non-conference games right there in North Carolina. So they played the three-game set Friday, Saturday, doubleheader on Saturday there at App State. They swept the series, of course. Did so in convincing fashion in the doubleheaders. Both of those games only went to five innings. And then on Monday, they played at Campbell, which is right there in Buse Creek, North Carolina. And then yesterday, they played at UNC Greensboro. And they picked up two additional wins. last night. It was a 6-2 victory that helped number 10 UL improve its record all the way to 39-4 overall. It's East Coast trip, or let's just call it what it is, a North Carolina trip, 5-game North Carolina trip. They come back 5-0 from that. They'll return to action Thursday for a 3-game set, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, versus Georgia State. That's Sun Belt Conference action, obviously. What'd they do last night? Well, they just went out there and took care of business like they've been doing all season long. This team has 39 wins. 39. They're 39-4. Last night they went out there, Summer Ellison picked up the win. 26-4 now on the year she is. Tremendous performance, as always, from Summer. Last night was no different. She pitched 5 innings, only gave up 2 hits, no runs, only 1 walk. She struck out 12. 5 innings, 12 strikeouts, no earned runs, only 2 hits, and 1 walk. Some of the other pitchers got some work as well in the game. Carrie Boswell pitched a third of an inning. She gave up 2 runs. Allison DeVille came in for an inning, and Casey Dixon pitched 2/3 of an inning. The Raging Cajuns were led at the plate. Once again, Keely Milligan just keeps tearing it up. She was 1-for-3. She scored a run, also had an RBI. Julie Rawls, she had herself. She was 1-for-4. Raina O'Neill was 2-for-4 with 2 RBIs. Lexi Como came in 1-for-2 with an RBI. Once again, balanced attack as always. Stepped up. Kara Gimeon, one of the leaders of this team. She went 2-for-3. Both of her hits were doubles. O'Neill's, one of her hits was that it was a great home run. And Keely got on the base paths and stole bases, as she's done all year. And look, UNC Greensboro is no slouch. That's a 25-win team, okay? So, wisely, once again, Jerry Glasgow and his staff decide to go out there, make the best of a situation of having to go to Boone, North Carolina, go all the way across the other end of the country, to have to play a weekend series. They're like, okay, we'll do this, but we'll add 2 games onto it. And this was scheduled. This wasn't like, hey, we're going to pick these up. You know, these were scheduled before, prior to the season, but that's wisely so. And the reason why they did that is because this weekend they got Georgia State for a 3-game series. And then after that, they only have 2 more series before the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in San Marcos, Texas. They got Georgia State this weekend. Then it's at home versus Coastal the next weekend, and then at ULM. And they got 1 midweek game in between there, and that's at La Tech. That's going to be on April 24th. So the season is winding down for the Raging Cajun softball team, and they just keep rolling right along. They have not lost a game since that 5-4 extra inning affair at Lampson Park that took 11 innings back on March 20th. I mean, they've won, I guess, 15, 16 in a row now. And this team, like I said, the McNeese was a head scratcher. Jerry Glasgow even joined us on the airwaves and talked about maybe they had gotten a little too overconfident. But you look at their losses. They lost that game to McNeese. They lost in 8 innings at Baylor, 4-3. They lost to then-ranked number 4 in the country, Oklahoma, at the Oklahoma Courtyard Marriott Tournament earlier in the season. And the one head-scratcher on that schedule is the loss to North Texas there in the Baylor Invitational, a team they had destroyed earlier that day, 10-2, but then came back and played them in the tournament again later that day and lost 5-1. With that exception, that blip, you just look at this team and what they've been able to do. And not to mention, you know, that Baylor loss, that 4-3 Baylor loss, well, they avenged that later on when they played Baylor at Lampson, beating them 4-1. And they came back and avenged their loss to McNeese 4-0 on April 3rd. This team really does feel like it's marching towards a super regional and possibly the College World Series there in Oklahoma. They still got business to take care of, obviously. Georgia State's this weekend for Easter. Then it's at La Tech next Wednesday, host Coastal Carolina, and then close out the regular season at ULM May 2nd through the 4th. And then the Sun Belt Conference Tournament is way over in San Marcos. Do not believe we'll be making a trip to cover that. We'll have to do some reporting on that via the television or via the interwebs. And then NCAA regionals start in May already. Softball season has just rolled right along. Like I said, Summer Ellison's going to put herself in contention. She should be the Sun Belt, not only Pitcher of the Year, but should be the Sun Belt Conference Player of the Year, and will be in the mix for All-America honors. Once again, UL's ranked number 10 in the country. And they wasted a little time as they doubled in a run and delivered an RBI single in the first inning. They jumped out to a 2-0 lead, and then it was 4-0 after four complete innings. Keely Milligan had four stolen bases in one game. In one game! There's some baseball players that can't even steal four bases in a season.
I mean, I'd have trouble stealing four bases if three of them were wild pitches. And baseball, excuse me, softball is that sport that happens a whole lot faster than baseball.
Mm-hmm. Milligan's four stolen bases matched the amount she posted on February 22nd versus Kent State. Ellison notched her ninth double-digit strikeout performance of the season and 12th of her career. Her season strikeout total is now 232, which surpasses her previous personal season best of 220 from last year. She's already surpassed her season total from last year for strikeouts. Crazy. Her career strikeout total is now 475, which leaves her just 25 shy of collecting her 500th tally of her career. Amazing job by the Raging Cajun softball program. That's going to do it for the first hour here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, Gerald Grunick, Big Red, will join us from KFY right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company. Hump Day edition for the first week of the new show right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of today's show. He is a New Orleans native, a Nicholls State football legend, a sportscasting titan of Acadiana who hung it all up to now do segments on tasty food. It's the one and only. It's Big Red Gerald Grunick. Gerald, what are you doing this morning, brother?
RP3, I just got done, dude. Man, if there's anybody that can get you excited about a garden and herb festival, I'm your guy, man. So we just did some stuff on Fosma 2 and Sunset, man. On our way to shoot a music segment this morning. We're going to shoot some food tomorrow.
I saw you, brother. I saw you. I drove right past you. I drove right past you. I live in Sunset. I drove right past you while you were setting up your shot there at City Hall.
Come on, man. We were there, baby.
I know you were, man. I know you were, brother. Well, look, man, let's talk. I want to talk Wally Pona with you because I know you're a New Orleans guy through and through, and you rep the city big. Your thoughts on the Wally Pona Classic, it being held there in Metairie at the Shrine on Airline. What does it mean for folks down there to have this game played?
Well, I think so often, right? I mean, geez, I remember growing up, we would, you know, every now and then baseball, football, we'd play games at Metairie Playground, which, of course, I believe is Ponet Park or Ponet Playground. You know, I think one of the biggest things and one of the biggest challenges, right, when we see it all the time, when people around musicians die, when, you know, community activists die, when, you know, local leaders pass, you know, when things happen, how do you keep the spirit of that person alive and what they meant? And I think, I would say Wally Pontiff Jr. is probably one of the greater success stories in the sense of keeping the legacy going. You know, the Pontiff Classic is huge. Obviously, having the playground, Metairie Playground, the name change is huge. I think you talk about an iconic sports figure, especially at the college level. I mean, Wally Pontiff, I mean, legend. So I think they have done such a good job of keeping the legacy alive of him and what he meant to the greater New Orleans area. I think that it just speaks volumes for the family. I mean, I've met, you know, the dad a couple of times, and what a class act. And I just think, like I said, that is probably the playbook on how, if you want to keep your legacy going, you know, obviously the life he lived was impactful, but what they're doing afterwards from the game and the park is just a really good representation of how it should be done in all aspects, not just in sports, but, you know, in community things, man.
Wrong with KLFY's own Gerald Grunig. Big Red, let's talk about, you know, I know the Baby Cakes, formerly known as the Zephyrs, are leaving. The AAA franchise is leaving after this season, relocating across the country. I know there's been a lot of talk about trying to get a AA ball club there. What are they going to do with the Shrine on Airline?
All right.
Your thoughts, how important is it to have another ball club in there? Because right now, the Wally Pontiff Classic is up in the air. Now, we had Wally Pontiff Sr. on yesterday on Ben Love's show on Bumper to Bumper Sports, and he's publicly stated, you know, that he's been talking to people behind the scenes to try to keep the game there regardless if there's a minor league baseball team there. How important is it to keep the Wally Pontiff Classic there at the Shrine? And for you, being a guy down there from that area, how important is it to get another ball club in that ballpark?
So, you know, it's crazy. You know, if LSU would promise to play, you know, six games a year at the Shrine on Airline, they probably get more people over the course of six games for LSU games than they do a baby cake season, man. You know, as far as the importance of baseball in New Orleans, you know, I'm not going to lie. I grew up down the street from the UNO Lakefront Arena when the Zephyrs used to play at the old Privateer Stadium. You know, and I remember being on the balcony we had on the back part of our restaurant and house that I grew up on top of. And, man, we can watch the fireworks on Fridays from the old lakefront. So I think, like, you know, those memories for me are a bit nostalgic. But as far as the attachment to baseball in New Orleans, just because, look, my grandfather was a huge Zephyrs guy. Season tickets will go to all the games. I think, you know, AAA and minor league baseball has gotten so gimmicky to an extent, whereas, you know, I think you kind of lost some traditionalist baseball fans when you change it to the Baby Cakes. And I get, you know, you try to, it's all about the gimmicks and the draws and the promotions. And I understand that because that's what sells tickets. But, you know, New Orleans isn't really a baseball town, which is crazy because the state itself loves baseball. And you would think having a AAA team a step away from the bigs would thrive down here, because you look at Death Valley. I say Death Valley. You look at the Box on Saturdays. You look at the Teague on Saturdays. You look at these big baseball schools here, and there aren't enough seats for college baseball. But when it comes to AAA ball, it never took off. And I say it never. It hasn't taken off since I've been around. You know, obviously I turned 29 a month from today, so it's like I don't know how important it is to get one back, because the facility could still get used. You could play Jesuit Brother Martin games there. You could play. I mean, there are plenty of games that keep the stadium useful. You know, I believe they play a high school football game there once a year. I think Holy Cross or John Curtis played somebody there a couple of years ago, and maybe they still do it. I think, you know, you could even play your in-state games in New Orleans. Nichols, Tulane, play it at the Shrine. You know, Southeastern Nichols, play it at the Shrine. You know, it kind of gives it a destination, opposed to there having to be a triple-A or a double-A or a single-A team there. I think there's still plenty of use for it. But it is. It's a monster, man. That is a big stadium and you don't want it to be an eyesore, because there's nothing worse than seeing an old stadium just sitting there vacant, man. Go look at Bringhurst Park, you know. Bringhurst and Alexandria, man. I mean, so much potential with Bringhurst. I mean, they say Babe Ruth played there. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those things. What happens? Then it starts to decay, and then you just got an eyesore. So I hope they still continue to find a use for it, for sure.
We're talking with Big Red, the one and only Gerald
Long
Rooney.
Answer to that. Sorry, Arthur.
That's a good answer, though, brother. It's a good answer. Hey, man, during your time there at Nichols, did you know Justin Payne?
Oh, yeah, JP, come on, man. Opelousas, bro. Look out. Let's go. Absolutely.
How happy are you for a former Colonel star on the hardwood and a longtime assistant coach getting his chance to be a head coach over at Georgia Southwestern State University?
So, look, you know, if there's one thing I know about college athletics, man, if you can put a run together somewhere for a long period of time, that's something you have to appreciate and cherish, and he's been able to spend a lot of time at his alma mater. So I think, you know, he's been in Thibodaux long enough. I think, you know, obviously it's got a special place in his heart. South Louisiana does as well, but I'm excited for the first gig, you know, but now starts the grind of life, man, right? Obviously you hope you can find a spot in a career where you can settle in and settle some roots, and I hope he enjoys it, and I'm excited for the opportunity for him. But, man, I have, you know, I'm excited for the future as well, where, you know, all of his attention obviously is going to go to this current gig, but you never, who knows, 5 years where you end up. That's the crazy part about college basketball, college sports in general. You know, if I were to tell you, you know, my assistants when I was at Nichols, what they're all doing now, it's crazy. So, I mean, my GA, right, one of my GAs that I signed when I was at Nichols is now in Kansas. He's coaching with Les Miles. Quan Drake is coaching the D-line at Kansas now. I mean,
nice.
Had another coach there all over the place. So the carousel starts now for JP, but I'm definitely excited for him, man. St. Landry Parish, baby. Let's go.
Gerald, let's talk a little bit about your thoughts on UL and LSU baseball teams. They've had some struggles. LSU's been dealing with a rash of injuries and a slew of midweek losses, including, and then they lost on the road at Missouri last weekend. They're kind of going in a little bit of a slump right now. UL has dealt with injuries as well. Gunnar Leje has not been the starter that they were hoping he would be. He's had to be in the bullpen. Where do you think these teams stand right now as we're in the middle of April?
Well, you know, I think if there's one thing you can attest to, Raymond, is that both of these teams are normally built for the off season. So, still plenty of. I mean, look, if you're playing in regionals, you're playing baseball in June, right? I mean,
correct.
That's the reality. So there's still. I mean, we're halfway through April. Still tournaments left to play, and that's when it really. I mean, does it matter seeding wise? Sure, but you know, if you're built to last, it doesn't matter what seed you get, man. You're gonna roll through regardless. So. Excited more for the postseason than I am right now, just because you know they'll both be there. The slumps come and go. I mean, I always call I know Robes will tell you about, you know, big innings and, you know, adrenaline and stuff like that, and I've always agreed with them. But to me, people say basketball is a game of runs. I've always considered baseball to be the same way, but in a different aspect. So I think both teams will be fine, you know, just getting through. It's a tough time of year, man, you know. For anybody, students, student athletes, you know, the end of the school year is picking up, all those things come into play, man. So, and I know something else, man, you know, the end of the year, girlfriends start to break up with boyfriends, boyfriends start to break up with girlfriends. Everybody's going home for the summer, and it's time to regroup. So, you know, you never know what's going on with everybody, but, you know, I get more excited for the tournaments because, you know, they'll both be in the mix.
Gerald, real quick, your Saints, your beloved Saints, my friend, you know, they don't have many draft picks this year, but there's talk that they may do some moving and shaking behind the scenes. I'll ask you this. Do you want to see them trade future picks to trade up to get a couple of key guys to get them over the hump this season for a Super Bowl, or would you rather them not do that?
Well, so if there's anything that we've learned about the New Orleans Saints and Mickey Loomis, right, is it's their ability to have impactful drafts, especially, man, you look at a pair of draft class, what, 2006, and then the one a couple of years ago. I mean, that has had huge implications on this franchise altogether. I mean, you have two draft classes, in my opinion, that are responsible, obviously with some big free agent signings, but not even that. You know, just with a couple of hits, man, you know, that has built the franchise. So I would rather see the Saints continue to get things done through the draft. The only problem is, you know, those golden draft classes only come once every couple of years. So, you know, it'll be interesting. You can't count them out. They always seem to make moves and make things shake up. But I think the Saints, in my opinion, I think Mickey Loomis, with a draft is a little more dangerous than you know, oh, let's wait and see what we can do through free agency in the future. But obviously I know draft picks have been traded for other draft picks, so you'll never hear me complain about that. But I do hope they shake a leg just because it makes it a little more exciting for the fans and for the people that are interested, you know, because RP3, you'll learn, as much as I love the Saints, I'm not a huge Sean Payton fan in the sense of his arrogance, and I know you got to be arrogant, don't get me wrong, but, you know, I don't mind seeing Sean Payton frustrated every now and then, too. I get a good kick out of it. So, anyway, I hope the Saints always do well, and I want them to be in the mix come draft because it gets exciting.
Big Red, we'll have you check out with this one, brother. What you got coming up there? Where are you going to be eating at this week? When can we watch it? Tell us a little bit about it, brother.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Every Thursday morning. Thanks for the plug, bro. Thursday mornings, baby, Acadiana East. Let's go. 5 to 7 a.m. on Pot 2. Yeah, you're right. And then I'm going to Frosto in Crowley. So you got the Louisiana Seafood King, Ryan Trahan, baby, working it, doing his thing over at the Blue Dog. Well, Ryan grew up in the restaurant business, similar to me, similar restaurant, to be honest with you. Old school to the max. Frosto in Crowley, baby. We did some shrimp po' boys, and we did an old school cheeseburger, bro. Some grilled onions dressed the right way, man. One of my favorite burgers, no doubt. So RP3, baby. Acadiana Eats on Thursdays, brother. You're the man. Good luck with the show, baby. I look forward to being on again, man.
Thank you, Big Red. It's Gerald Gruner, KLFY, giving us a little time here on RP3 in Company, breaking down a slew of topics. Got to go up or head up to a break right now. When we come back, we'll talk a little baseball, a little Strohs. They keep up their winning ways right here on 103.7 The Game.
Breaking balls pop to left field. That one's got a chance. Grossman goes back, looks up, grand slam! Alex Bregman, a four-bagger. The Astros lead it 8-0.
Hanging breaking ball all over it.
All over it. Looking for something on the inner third and got the barrel out there. For Bregman, home run number 2 on the season.
Former LSU star Alex Bregman with the grand slam, helping the Houston Astros win yet another game last night at Oakland, 9-1 for the Strohs as they improved to 12-5 overall on the season, and now they are in first place in the AL West. So much for those April champion Seattle Mariners.
Right. Now, how many wins in a row? Say this was, I think this was 10 in a row.
I think it's 10 in a row now.
And now they're going for 11 in a row after, oh no, the sky is falling, the ship is sinking. The Astros, they won the season opener and then lost, what, 3 in a row? Oh no, no. Now they've won 10 in a row.
Yeah, they
good baseball teams are good baseball teams.
Right.
I'm not saying even Astros fans, at least not around here, Astros fans weren't saying that. But something, again, and I don't want to trigger Stros fans because, again, I've said it before. Since the Stros have made their move to the American League, I have been able to fully and openly, you know, appreciate. Before, when they were in the National League, even if I liked what Houston was doing as a Cubs fan, I wasn't really allowed to say it out loud. Now that they moved to the American League, I can openly appreciate what they're doing. And I still, it is the... I don't want to call it a bias, but the ignoring, if you will, of the Astros from the kind of national media there, it still bothers me. Like, I've noticed on SportsCenter and on these big shows, you don't hear anything. The Astros are on a 10-game winning streak here, and the top story is still like, when is Clayton Kershaw coming back?
Well, that's an issue with the national media when it comes to baseball coverage. Baseball's become far more a regional game.
Right.
Okay. It was the nation's pastime. I think it's now regional. That's why, you know, attendance is still so good for baseball because the people that care about that team are still going to the games.
Right.
They're not depending on the four-letter network making sure to show them their team's game or even the MLB network package.
And I agree with you. What you're saying there is absolutely true, but you would think common sense-wise, so shame on me for trying to use a little common sense in this situation. But common sense would tell you with George Springer hitting a home run last night, Josh Reddick hit a two-run home run, Alex Bregman hit a grand slam last night, the Astros are hitting for power, they're playing exciting baseball. It seems like Houston is doing everything you need to do, is checking all the boxes to get that national love. And I'm not saying they don't get mentioned. Of course they get mentioned. They just took first place in the division. But they're not the Yankees. They're not the Cubs. They're not the Red Sox. They're almost not even the Braves.
It's Yankees, Red Sox, and then everyone else.
Well, Dodgers.
So when you're talking about national coverage when it comes to baseball, it's Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers. Those are the three that they care about. Then you get to...
The Cubs are in that Cubs, second tier.
Cubs are second tier.
The Nationals, when they had Bryce Harper, maybe the Phillies now.
I say Cardinals.
The Cardinals are in that second tier.
Second tier.
A lot of Sunday night baseball. When you catch that Sunday night baseball game,
right? Your Cubs, your Cardinals, your Braves, Astros. Those are your second tier national teams when it comes to the national media. But they'd much rather talk about.
Cleveland's made it there.
They'd much rather talk about Boston struggling and Chris Sale getting roughed up. Okay, because they're the defending World Series champions. Plus, they're Boston, right? The other thing that hurts the Astros, and this is a legitimate thing. When they're on the road on the West Coast.
That is tough.
That's tough because those games don't start till what, 8:30 Central Time?
They're live right here tonight on 103.7 The Game, 9:10 first pitch. 9:10 p.m. first pitch live on 103.7 The Game. That just shows, you know, for the local fan, and I'm not even saying just local in Acadiana, local in Houston, you know, you're up till, you know, James Yasko, Pat McClellan, they're sitting up till 9:10 tonight just to watch first pitch. James Yasko is a school teacher, and he's going to be up till, you know, damn near midnight tonight watching the Stros game.
He'll be filled with energy tomorrow morning when we bring him on the show.
You have to ask him how he's dealt with these West Coast, because he's had a couple years now to get into the swing. You have to see how he deals with it.
Yeah, but that's tough on them, right? That's just tough because when they have to play at Seattle. Teacher,
how's it on the team?
They're playing at Seattle. They're playing at Oakland. They'll play it at Anaheim of Los Angeles County, whatever the Angels' name.
The Disneyland Angels.
Whatever their damn name is. Okay, so they have to play on that, and they get left behind. Kind of like in college football, the Pac-12 is kind of forgotten because they always play so late.
It's Pac-12 after dark.
Pac-12 after dark. See, it's the same, thing.
AL West after dark?
Yeah, I guess. Guess so. But the Stros... Complete effort last night, as Cody already mentioned. A lot of people contributed. George Springer, 2 for 2.
Springer Dinger.
Jose Altuve, 1 for 3. The pint-sized basher this season, the start off the year. Yuli Gurriel, he had a hit as well. Tyler White was 3 for... He ended up getting 3 walks.
Plate discipline.
That's plate discipline. Good effort by Colin McHugh. We've been monitoring that seeing who's going to step up as maybe that number two behind Justin Verlander. It looks like Colin McHugh may be staking a claim to that in this early portion of the season. Six solid innings of work, only two hits, no earned runs, struck out five, only walked two. So complete effort for the Stros as they are now in first place in the AL West. And they just keep rolling right along, brother. They will wrap up that game, as you said, first pitch, 9:07 our time. You can hear it right here on 103.7 game. They'll wrap up the series against the Oakland Athletics. When we come back here, we'll talk to the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, right here on 103.7 the game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is the voice of the LSU Tigers. It's the one and only Chris Blair. How are you this morning, Chris?
I'm doing good, man. How about the Cliffs of Dover, man? I like that. You could do that every week. That's a jam there.
All right, we're going to make a note of that, Chris. We're going to take care of you, brother. Let's talk a little bit about the game last night. It was an exciting game, back-and-forth contest. We kind of expected that, right, Chris, with both teams dealing with some struggles and some injuries, particularly LSU. Your initial thoughts from what you saw last night there at the Shrine on Airline?
Well, it was a good game. I mean, it was a fun game. It was a great atmosphere. It's one of the more enjoyable nights I had, to be honest with you. It's the only road trip away from Alec Box out of conference that I truly enjoy. I mean, it's just for a great cause. And again, the atmosphere is good. It's nice to have it at that ballpark, and hopefully that will continue. At least that's the plan, even though I know the baby cakes are heading north to Wichita. But you know what? I was kind of encouraged. I mean, LSU's without their number two and four hole hitters. They're without two of the top hitters. They're without two of their clutch hitters. And, you know, at times, offensively, some guys who really need to kind of get it in gear, you know, got it in gear. And, you know, that was a good sign. But, you know, you got to tip your cap. But Jacob Schultz came in for the Raging Cajuns, did an excellent job, again, to kind of quiet the bats for LSU. Give his team a chance to get something going, and then you got two back-to-back jacks, two run and a solo shot, and again, they're able to hold on to victory. But, you know, LSU's got bigger issues to deal with, and that is they've got to get healthy, and they've got to get more production out of more than four guys, five guys in their lineup, and they don't have a whole lot of time to figure that out. I mean, they've got a real important series. I mean, I get it. People get fired up about these games in state, but, you know, it's, for LSU, it's about what they do in the SEC. In fact, you know, when you look at their overall record, it truly all comes down to what happens in the SEC. If any of the goals that they set out for this year, you know, they want to accomplish. I mean, they're just going to have to find a way. And, you know, the Florida team comes in, a young team. But, you know, it's this time of year where it's kind of hard to say a guy's a true freshman. They're not. They're veteran freshmen. And, you know, this is a time when teams who are going to make that move start making that move. And, you know, I expect Florida to come in here to the Box Thursday, Friday, and Saturday and be ready to go. And, you know, LSU is still kind of a question mark who they'll go with in game one to start. They're not going to move Cole Henry. They're not going to move Eric Walker. I think conventional wisdom says maybe Mikael Hilliard gets that. But, again, he's going to have to step up. So, anyway, enjoyed the night at the ballpark. It was great. Again, great crowds and a great baseball game to watch. And, you know, Skip Bertman told us on the broadcast, it was great to have him join us for a little bit. And he said, you know, you're looking at two teams right now that, you know, probably haven't played as well as they have liked. And as you pointed out, there's been some key injuries on both sides that have hampered that. You know, the Cajuns playing a lot better, having two weekend series in the Sun Belt. Victories over the last 2 weeks. But he said, you know, what's great about the state of Louisiana and great about the Wally Bonner Jr. Classic is you've got, you know, I don't know what they finally said, 8,500 or so people inside that ballpark to watch two teams and really just enjoy the game of baseball without a whole lot on the line. So that's a good thing.
We're talking with Chris Blair. He's the voice of the LSU Tigers. Chris, what'd you think of Todd Peterson? He looked very good. I know he started the game. He only pitched the one inning, but man, he looked lights out. Do you think that's going to be a good confidence booster for him the rest of the way?
that's got to be the theme for everybody. I mean, they're going to have to find a way to really rise above whatever their issues have been this year. And, you know, credit to Todd. He's had four really good innings going back to last week in the Friday game one against Missouri, where he had three perfect innings, retired nine batters in a row, and five of them by strikeout. And, you know, again, we knew the strategy going in that would possibly use nine pitches or more for LSU just because they're more concerned about the weekend series with Florida, the lack of arms they have. But, yeah, it was a great sign. I mean, he's going to have to whenever he's called upon. You know, there's some people that think that possibly with the important game one that maybe he would get the start. I still think they'll keep him out of the bullpen. But whenever he comes into the game, I mean, hopefully he's going to continue what he's done here of late because he certainly had an up and down year.
Chris, Daniel Cabrera is still kind of returning to form. What did you think of his performance last night, and do you feel like he's making strides getting back to his old self?
Well, he certainly did much better than he did, I think, overall against Missouri. I mean, there was too many strikeouts. In fact, this year I think there's been way too many strikeouts. And, you know, I'm not sure if it's Daniel, you know, misjudging what he's looking for depending on the count at the plate, but it's been a lot of takes for him. And to be honest with you, it's been a lot of takes with fastballs. And, you know, that just seems odd. And I know Coach Maneri told me Monday night on the show that the strikeouts are way too high based on what they thought coming into the season. So I think Cabrera still has his best to come here in 2019, but not to sound like a broken record, it's about time to start heading in that direction because they're going to need him to get back. And, you know, again, when you're coming off tendonitis of the wrist and talking about hitting a baseball, anytime you talk about something with the arms or the hands, that you know, that's going to affect things. So I still think there's a little bit of rust to get off there. But, you know, hit the ball. The contact was very good. I mean, he had that infield single that, you know, was smacked right at the first baseman. And, you know, just he put a body on it, tried to knock the glove down, gave a great effort. But it was just too hot off the bat to glove cleanly. So I like the contact. I just, again, got to find a way to not let so many good pitches go by without even a swing.
We're talking to Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers. Chris, you look at this team, it's an early turnaround for them because of the Easter weekend, as you already stated. They're welcoming Florida, a young team, but an emerging team. I want to say they crept into the top 25 this week in the national polls. With such the quick turnaround, how quickly will we find out who will be that, quote-unquote, first-game starter? When do you think that announcement's going to be made?
I think it could come possibly today. I mean, that's the one thing I like about working with Coach Palmer. I mean, he typically doesn't try to use any games or, you know, keep things hidden. I truly believe, and you know, talking with him on the air and off the air Monday night, that, you know, there was a lot of thought going into that. Again, because you're without your game one starter. So, you know, that kind of throws all of your normal plans out the window. Then you add to the fact that you've got a number of guys on the shelf that are not at your disposal, and you've got a three-game series. So it was clear that there's been a lot of discussion on what's the best way, not only to name that starter on Thursday night, but, you know, what's the plan after that if he does well. If he doesn't do well, you know, how many arms are you going to try to save for the back half of the series? So it wouldn't surprise me if it comes out today. Depends on how much, speaking to the media, that they do, because, again, with the short week, there may be a media session, and there may not. And it wouldn't shock me at all if later today that we don't know who's going to start. Mainly because, again, as I said, Paul's very transparent. And secondly, you know, whether or not he lets the public know, he certainly wants the guy who's going to be on the bump tomorrow night to know about it. So it could come as early as today.
Chris, Eric Walker, it's been an up-and-down season for him. We kind of anticipated that, though, a little bit, especially with the severity of the injuries and the him missing all of last year. Do you see anything from him in the last few outings that are positives, in your opinion, that he's maybe about ready to turn a corner and kind of return to form himself?
I sure hope so. I mean, he has really, you know, worked hard to number one, get back from that injury and surgery, but you know, there's been times over the last couple of outings where you've seen the, you know, the velocity get up there to where we were accustomed in 2017, and that was, you know, 88, sometimes touching 89 miles an hour. And again, he's never been an overpowering blow-it-by-you pitcher, but you know, the problem has been, even when he's found some good spots with the accuracy and the control, there's not a lot of command, or, you know, the pitch has been around 84, 85. And, you know, again, it's much easier for me to say how easy it is to hit a pitch like that. But, you know, in this league, you can get into trouble there. But we have seen it start to climb up a little bit. Didn't have his good stuff, obviously, this past weekend. You know, I think he'd be the first to tell you that. But, you know, that happens from time to time. So I think when you look at the overall body of work, everything has trended in the right direction. And hopefully it'll be the same thing coming up this weekend, because we expect him to be out there again on a short week for this pitching staff in what could be a very important game three.
Chris, we'll wrap it up with this, brother, and we'll let you get back to enjoying the rest of your morning. What kind of challenges does this Florida Gators team present to LSU when they come to the box for this Easter weekend series?
Well, as I said before, I mean, it's one of the younger teams Coach O'Sullivan has had. I mean, he's really been able to keep the cupboard pretty full the last couple of years, including that national title 2 years ago. And this year, just one of those years where he had those incredible arms last season, and they were all ready to move to the next level and have done so. So it's a young team, but, you know, a lot like Louisiana, for really all the schools in this state. And that, I think, goes without saying, but sometimes we overlook the fact that, you know, Louisiana Lafayette has a ton of great players from this state of Louisiana. I mean, Southeastern does, McNeese does, Northwestern State does, obviously LSU does. But Florida's kind of in the same position. They're surrounded by great talent from top to bottom in the Sunshine State. And because of their success and a little dip, even though Florida State's been consistent, I think Florida overall has kind of had more of the shine, if you speak, on the national level. I mean, they've been able to pick and choose. So it's a team that comes in with a ton of talent. And anybody who follows baseball knows when you have a young team, the only way you're going to get better is to get those reps in the field and at the plate. And that's what they've done. And now we've turned to mid-April, and we know what Coach O'Sullivan and his staff can do with talent. So you got to be concerned about, you know, what they're bringing in. And when you start at the beginning of the season and the start of the SEC play, it's interesting to go back, because you can do so on the SEC website. You can go back to previous weeks and check the stat totals. And you can watch the Florida Gators, really probably more so than any other team in the league, creep up in really all the three major categories, fielding percentage, ERA, and hitting. You know, they still got a long way to go. And I think the future is obviously bright for them, but they've gotten better as the week's gone on. And as you said, in a couple of polls, able to get up there in the top 25. And I think if you ask Gator fans a month and a half ago, they thought this year was just a wash and let's try to win as many games as we can and look towards the future. But I think that attitude's changed a little bit. And I think because it's a pretty good rivalry series on the diamond between Florida and LSU, as it is in most other sports, you know, they're coming in and they sense blood in the water. I mean, obviously LSU's depleted in the lineup. We're still not sure if Watson and Reed will be able to go this weekend. It's pretty evident that, you know, Zach Cass will not start the weekend on the mound. So, again, I think it's going to be a tall challenge. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, the Tigers have had great series on the road against Mississippi State when they came off a disappointing and really poor performance in the midweek. Somehow found a way to do it on the road in Starkville. Similar with the tough loss to McNeese State, and then came in for 2 of 3 from a top 10 team in Texas A&M. You know, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but they're going to have to play their best series of baseball this week, because I don't think Florida's going to come in and lay down one iota.
Chris, appreciate you making the time for us as always, brother. Enjoy the 3-game series there at the box this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
No, thank you very much. Again, congratulations to the Cajuns and Coach Robichaud. They did an excellent job last night. And as I said throughout the broadcast, that's another team that's battled injury and continues to get better. And I know that they're going to make a run in that pretty good Sun Belt Conference. So, again, looking forward to a good weekend at the box. Enjoying Easter weekend, and hope everybody has a great one. Go Tigers.
Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers, joining us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll close out the second hour.
Today is NFL releases schedule day. Did you even know that? And are you excited about it? We'll talk more about that when we come back here on 103.7 The Game.
out? Hot off the press from today's Post.
Oh, my God.
This is cake! That's what I said.
Let's go Miami.
13-3. Easy.
What are your three losses?
Green Bay, New England, Chargers.
We could easily beat Green Bay.
14-2.
Oh, man.
What?
New England, December 20th. I get out that week. Patsies are toast. There's no way we're losing with us in the parking lot.
Not a chance.
15-1.
Totally realistic.
Oh, man. Oh, man. It's going to be a great year.
Says every fan after the schedule will be released tonight for the NFL.
I might play that again tomorrow because it's going to be just as true.
Welcome back to RP3 Company here on 103.7 The Game. The NFL will release the complete season schedule for all teams tonight. We already know that the Saints are going to be having an NFC Championship game rematch with the L.A. Rams. That'll be, though, at Los Angeles. We do know that. We do know these are what the Saints' home games are for the 2019 season. They'll be playing, of course, against the Carolina Panthers, Atlanta Falcons, Tampa Bay Bucks, the three division games. They also will be hosting the Arizona Cardinals. Kyler Murray comes to town, possibly. San Francisco 49ers, the Houston Texans, the Indianapolis Colts, and Dallas Cowboys. I like those home games. I mean, you get the Cowboys, who does not like to cheer against the Cowboys.
Right.
The Colts, Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
Houston Texans, Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins. That's just some dynamic guys. J.J. Watt.
Clowney.
San Francisco 49ers. You got, I've been told, is a very handsome man in Jimmy Garoppolo. At least that's what I've been told.
Right.
And then, you know, the Cardinals, they'll have possibly a number one overall pick playing for them, and then you got your divisional rivals.
I would like to officially, on behalf of Mickey Loomis, Gale Benson, Sean Payton, Drew Brees, the Saints organization and franchise, probably the entire city of New Orleans, now the whole state, I would like to, on behalf of everyone inside the borders of Louisiana, I would like to issue a challenge to the Los Angeles Rams. That rematch, no matter if it's the opening game of the season, the last game of the season, it doesn't matter. When that game happens, since you have home field advantage, we get to pick the stipulation, last man standing. It's fine. I don't see what the issue is. Forget the scoreboard. Shut it down. Turn it off. We don't need the clock. We don't need any of that. No score, nothing. 11 guys on one side, 11 guys on the other. Your toughest 11 versus my toughest 11. Last man standing. That team wins.
I like the Saints' chances.
See, that's what I'm saying. See, I think the state would be behind this.
The region could be behind this.
There might be a blog post for this that we can
have. Hell, there's probably half of Los Angeles that would be behind this because we know how fanatical they are about their football teams.
Could you imagine? You know, if we challenge the fan bases to a fight, me and you could probably take all the Rams fans now.
They'll be taken care of. The only person we'd have to fight is Dickerson. That'd be the only person.
We're in trouble.
We're in trouble.
That's a hard man.
That's still a hard man. We do know that the Saints' road games, obviously the three divisional games at Carolina, Atlanta, and Tampa Bay, but they also will be traveling to play the Tennessee Titans, which is not that far for if you wanted to go to Nashville. The Seattle Seahawks, and they'll face the highest paid player in the NFL annually now because Russell Wilson got that mega deal from the Seahawks. They'll be playing at Chicago. Let's hope that's not late in the season. At the Rams, as Cody already alluded to. And then, of course, at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ooh.
You know we'll play the Jags in, beginning of September. And we'll play Chicago in, the middle of January. They'll schedule it that way. Don't worry, we're the Saints. You know that's how that's going to happen. The Jags in the summer or in the summer there. And we got Chicago in the winter. Can't wait.
Yes, so the NFL will officially announce the schedules for the season tonight at 7 p.m. on the NFL Network. But I have to be critical of something here.
Please do.
Do we really need this to be a television special? It's the schedule. Just release the damn thing, first of all. And then on top of it, the Deuce is going to be running a two-hour special beginning at the same time to break down the schedules. What happened to just releasing the damn schedule and saying, the Saints played these teams, done.
We got to have it drawn out for 2 hours. Like, for real, man.
Because Snickers said so.
Oh, we know the opponents. We know who's going to be at home. We know who's going to be on the road. We just don't know when those games are going to take place. We will find that out tonight at 7 p.m. We'll talk more about the Saints' 2019 schedule with Les East on tomorrow's show. But this is going to do it for the second hour of RP3 and Company. When we come back, we're going to welcome on an old friend, former LSU star and Saints Super Bowl champion, the one and only, the Big Fave himself, Marlon Favorite, will join us right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of this hump day edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We've spent the day talking about the Wally Poniff Classic between LSU and UL. We've also touched on some Raging Cajun softball and Astros picking up another big victory, this time 9-1 over the Oakland Athletics as former LSU star Alex Bregman hit himself a grand slam. But now we're going to talk a little NFL talk and some college football talk with our next guest. He is a former SEC and BCS national champion for the LSU Tigers. He also won a Super Bowl ring as a member of the New Orleans Saints. It's our good friend, the one and only Marlon Favorite. Marlon, how you doing this morning, brother?
Man, pretty good, RP, man. Thanks for having me on. Hello, somebody. Talk to me, 337.
Marlon, I'm glad you made some time for us, brother. I want to get right into it. Let's talk a little bit about your thoughts from what you saw in the entirety of spring football there for LSU with the conclusion of the spring game a couple of weeks back. Anything stood out to you? Anything impressed you?
I think the most impressive thing to me was the leadership of Michael Divinity on the defensive side of the ball. He's really stepped up and filled those shoes for Devin White as their vocal leader, and it showed in the spring game. Not to mention he's a West banker. Hello. But, I mean, he really has improved his game. And then secondly, RP, on the offensive side of the ball, I really like Joe Burrow, man. He really stepped up to the plate, just being that vocal leader. Brennan looked good as well. A position that's a position of concern is the running back position. I thought that Chris Curry showed some strides. So, I think all the Tiger fans out there should be super excited about this offseason. Now, I mean, this upcoming season. Now, I cannot go anywhere without talking about this one particular guy. I've been knowing him since he was a little boy, really good friends with his dad. His dad actually coached against me in arena football, and that's Derek Stingley Jr. That very impressive interception he had, I want to say this was in the second quarter of the first half of the scrimmage, was very impressive, man. So it appears that LSU is just reloading, and you know, that's a good thing.
Marlon, someone that really stood out to me was the play along the defensive line, in particular at nose tackle, the young man, the early enrollee out of Utah. He had himself a heck of a spring game, and I know he had been in competition all spring long, with Acadiana product, former Northside High star and Notre Dame of Crowley star Tyler Shelvin there at the nose tackle spot. Both of those guys made plays in the spring game, and Coach O and his staff have had high praise for both in replacing Ed Alexander What are your thoughts about those two young men?
Both of those guys, they fit the mold of that defense. You talk about the kid out of Utah. He's a big guy, wide, broad shoulders, can hold up those blocks. And he was eating the runs up along with Sheldon. And that's what this LSU defense calls for. You know, back when we played at LSU, we were more along the lines of a 4-3 defense, gap protection, you know, play your gap, quote unquote. But, I mean, now that I sit here and I look at the way this defense is developing under Dave Aranda, they're filling those spots. You know, this is a guy, in my opinion, that knows his personnel, knows the type of players he needs to really be explosive inside. And when you mention the kid out of Utah and Sheldon, you know, these are two guys, again, RP, man, that are big nose guards. And that 3-4 scheme, they can really play that two-gap. And I mean, that's really what LSU needs in terms of shutting down the run game, particularly in the inside zones.
We're on with Marlon Favorite. He's the host of the Inside the Trenches podcast, which you can download on iTunes. Marlon, let's talk, you know, I know they weren't going to open up the playbook with the new kind of offense and the wrinkles that they want to bring to the offense because it's the spring game, and they still want to work on some things and perfect it before unleashing it in the season opener against Georgia Southern. That said, one of the things that stood out to me is that, you know, they're still going to get to Jefferson. Burrow's still going to throw the ball downfield. They like that. They got some answers there at running back, like you mentioned. I was impressed by Curry as well. He's definitely going to have a say-so in who's going to be getting reps out of the backfield. Any concerns for you, though, about pass protection? Because I know you can't sack the quarterback in the spring game, but there was like 8 sacks total in this game. A lot of pressure, and those pockets weren't necessarily staying intact throughout the game. Any concern about that, which was a big concern last year?
It's a few concerns. You do have some returning starters, guys that played a lot. Shadeek Charles, you know, if he stays healthy, I think he'll make a major impact on the offensive line. And, you know, you have Torrell who went down in the spring game. So just to keep him healthy as well, Deculus, you know, he's a guy that got thrown into the fire last year. A guy, again, that, in my opinion, you know, played in some very tough SEC games and had to show and prove himself as an offensive lineman. One of the more important positions on the offensive line, if you ask me. I mean, this guy, some call this guy the second smartest guy on the team, and that's the center position. And Lord Kirchenberry, again, a guy last year that had all SEC talent, has to hold down that inside as well. So, I mean, you have a group of guys with experience, the Damon Lewis of the world. We mentioned Austin Deculus. And then, of course, Chasen Hines, guy who came in as a defensive lineman but had the skills to play on both sides of the ball. So that's definitely an area I know Coach Ed Orgeron is going to address, and that's the interior offensive line, and make sure, you know, Burrow has all the protection he needs. But it also brings another important question, RP. Will we see a two-quarterback system? Will we see a Peter Parrish come in and get those Lowell Narcisse reps that we heard about when Lowell and obviously Justin McMillan had transferred last year? Now that we have a dual quarterback, will we do that? And that'll also change the dynamic of the blocking up front as well.
We're on with Marlon Favorite, BCS national champion with LSU and a Super Bowl champion with the New Orleans Saints. Marlon, one last question about LSU and the football team. Fall camp will be here in no time at all. What are some of the things that LSU needs to work on during fall camp to get themselves the most prepared they can be to make a run for the college football playoff? If there's one area of concern that they need to work on diligently, what is that?
Well, I think you said it in one area, that's the offensive line. you mentioned the podcast earlier. We got to take it inside the trenches, baby. Hello, somebody. And I think that that area is an area of concern. Again, these are guys that had reps last year, played in some tough SEC games. You think about Florida on the road, how tight-knit that game was. You think about the Bama game, which is always in the memory of us LSU fans and former players. So the offensive line, you want to tighten that up so you have a comfortable and confident Joe Burrow. He can make those deep down passes, because I can tell you one area of concern I'm not concerned about. That's the receiving core. So I do think that if you give Joe Burrow the proper time and the comfort in the pocket to where he can make those throws down the field, that'll be huge for the Tigers. And then I still have questions and concerns about the defensive line. We didn't get a lot of sacks last year, and I know a lot of it is schematic, you know, the way Coach Aranda runs his defense and the way he wants to use those guys. So, I mean, you have a guy like Divinity who's moved to the middle linebacker spot. I'm pretty sure they're going to use a little bit of Jacob Phillips in the rushing, you know, to rush with the linebackers. But, I mean, it's a big deal for Brandon Fehoko and Rashard Lawrence and all of those guys to really make a huge impression, a huge stride up front to really, you know, again, give LSU the type of pressure we need to put on those quarterbacks, make it easy on those defensive backs. So I think those two areas of concern for me are the offensive line and the defensive line.
Marlon, let's switch over to the draft. You have two guys from LSU that are expected to be taken in the first round of next week's draft, which will be on Thursday, the first round. Second round and third round will be on Friday, with fourth through seventh on Saturday of next week. Greedy Williams has been going up and down draft boards depending on who you ask. Some feel like he's going to be a top 10 pick, top 15 pick. Some say he's going to be taken late in the first round. Devin White has pretty much been a consensus top 5 or top 10 pick. I don't want to focus on those two guys because we know those guys are going to get drafted. Someone like Ed Alexander, who did not get to go to the combine, but he had himself a hell of a pro day, Marlon, especially on the bench press, showed off his strength, did well in some other drills. Where do you see a guy like Ed being drafted, and what kind of fit scheme-wise do you think he's best suited for at the next level?
I mean, this guy has been climbing up the charts. He really has. I was a little disappointed in a decision for him to leave earlier. But if you look at the demand of those type of defensive linemen in the league, those nose guards that can really play the run, it isn't bad. If I had to, you know, pick a spot, I would probably say he's somewhere like a mid-rounder. Anywhere between the fourth and the sixth round, I think he lands. What are some good places for him to land? I mean, Denver's a place that comes to mind. The Rams, they already have an LSU guy there, and Michael Brockers, plus they run the 3-4 defense as well. You know, you start thinking about, you know, teams like Jacksonville, you know, that go with those bigger nose guards, even along the lines of a Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, they usually go with those interior, those big guys inside. I mean, all of those teams I mentioned are good fits for him. And I think the nose guard will be, you know, he'll be around for that. But he definitely turned some heads at the pro day. You know, a guy that he has the size, obviously, and he understands the two-gap system. He understands how to use that. I mean, if you ask me, he's a guy who really shined this year for LSU. Wanting to see him back for sure. But, you know, you have to make that decision. So I see him somewhere between fourth and sixth round coming off the boards.
What about Foster Moreau? He's another guy that's been climbing up the boards too, right, Marlon? Had a terrific week at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. Had a very good combine in Pro Day. People are very high on him. He's the pleasant surprise in a very talented tight end group of like, oh, this guy can catch the ball because he wasn't really utilized that much or as much as they'd like to at LSU. Foster Moreau is a guy that's climbing up the board as well. Where do you like him? Where do you think he would be a good fit?
Not to sound biased because we're in a bayou land, but I do think the New Orleans Saints is a good fit for him. I mean, they're a team that they don't have a first-round draft pick. They traded with Green Bay last year for Marcus Davenport, which, in my opinion, was smart. You want to beef up and add some some depth to that line, defensive line, some size in the starting lineup. But if you look at, you know, Foster Moreau's play, his ability to catch downfield, his ability to block, his leadership, everything across the board about him really, really sounds off and is good. We see him somewhere, maybe going to the Saints second, third round as a solid tight end for them to come in and contribute. But I mean, you look at teams like Seattle, again, just signed Russell Wilson to the biggest, he's the highest paid NFL player. You know his relationship with tight ends, Jimmy Graham, Carson, guys that, you know, again, kind of remind me of that build up of Foster Moreau. Foster's 6'5", 260. He can block as well. He can be used as a blocker. So it wouldn't surprise me if he suits up in those Seattle colors or play right here for the hometown team here in New Orleans, the Saints.
Marlon, one last question. We'll get you out of here, brother, and let you enjoy the rest of your day. Saints do not have a first-round draft pick. They only have the second rounder and then not a third or a fourth. There's been some speculation that they may take a pick and trade up or trade Andrus Pete to compile some more picks. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think the Saints are going to make some moves, Mickey Loomis and Jeff Ireland? You think they're going to do some wheeling and dealing to get more picks for next week's draft?
Wheeling and dealing, baby, in the words of Ric Flair. Woo! I do think they do some wheeling and dealing. They do. It's all about leveraging the draft. This roster is just about complete. They can use another good tight end, especially with Ben Watson retiring. They did re-sign Josh Hill. Of course, he's a guy that appears to be grandfathered in their program. But I do see some trades, RP. I do see, you know, maybe some picks for next year. Possibly they have a few lateral round picks. They may try to trade to try to get up there to make it attractive. I don't see them touching any of their golden guys on that side of the ball, on both sides of the ball, really, with the young guys that they have under contract still to make some attractive trades. So I don't know. I think this team is pretty content with what they did last year. But we do know the immediate need for the Saints to get some pass rushers. You're going to have – they was able to bring in Malcolm Brown to give some interior pressure, but, you know, maybe kind of look at another rotating defensive end to get in there maybe on third down for Davenport at times. So it'll be interesting to see how this thing goes next week with the draft.
Marlon, appreciate you as always, my friend. Tell the people, when's the next Inside the Trenches podcast? When is it dropping?
Man, we're actually in the process of revamping everything. Sometime before the draft, we're going to do our next episode, me and EA. But, man, again, we're super excited. We love the energy, you know, the change up on that side. And, man, they'll get a lot more coming soon.
Well, Marlon, man, looking forward to that, man. Looking forward to talking to you next week as well. Help us preview a little bit of the draft. And you enjoy the rest of your week, my friend.
You do the same, brother. Happy hump day.
Marlon Favorite, BCS national champion with the LSU Tigers and Super Bowl champion with the New Orleans Saints, joining us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, New Orleans Pelicans are going to have themselves a press conference today. Woo! Is it going to be a good day for the Pels, ladies and gentlemen? We'll dive into that right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roof. The New Orleans Pelicans obviously did not have the season anyone had hoped for. Dell Demps fired. Anthony Davis demands trade. Jrue Holiday injured. Elfrid Payton injured. Anthony Davis injured. Missed the playoffs. Losing record. Sky is falling in the Smoothie King Center. That said, today is a damn good day, Pels fans. David Griffin has been hired as the new vice president and director of basketball operations for the New Orleans Pelicans. They will have his press conference today around 12:45, or as my friends in New Orleans say, well, New Orleans time will make it about 1:05. Things go at their own pace down there in New Orleans. David Griffin is a guy who has won a world championship as the general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is a guy who has also worked in the front office for more than a decade with the Phoenix Suns when they were good. I'm talking Mike D'Antoni, Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, good. They're going to have the presser today, and it's going to be a great way to start off this offseason. You bring in a guy like that to run your basketball ops, more than likely reports are that he's going to hire himself a general manager. So once again, not only are you going to have one basketball-minded guy running the Pels, he's going to bring in another. So you're going to have two. The brain trust increases. It gets better. You're not forcing Mickey Loomis to have to chip in addition of his responsibilities with the New Orleans Saints, and have to have him help run the show with the Pels. You got your guy now. You got David Griffin. This guy is a proven winner. He knows how to build a franchise. He's the guy that helped convince LeBron James to come back to Cleveland. He's the guy that pulled off the Kevin Love trade with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And he's the guy that put all those other pieces around LeBron and Kevin Love and Kyrie, like J.R. Smith and all these other role players, that helped the Cavs get to three straight finals and win the NBA championship. I do not expect for him to take very long to make things happen. He's going to hire himself a GM. They're going to make a decision on Alvin Gentry. Some reports say that he may like Alvin Gentry to return. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. We'll dive into that maybe tomorrow when we bring on Les East from CrescentCitySports.com. That said, the Pels are heading in the right direction. No more Dell Demps being mediocre and allowing the franchise to be mediocre around him. You got a guy who's aggressive. You got a guy who's whip smart, and he knows how to build teams. And he's going to get the most for Anthony Davis. If Demps was still here, they would have been taken to the cleaners with Anthony Davis trade. David Griffin, it's going to be the polar opposite. It's money in the bank. When we come back, we're going to talk to our good friend from Saturday Down South, Connor O'Gara. He's going to give us a recap nationally of spring football, including LSU, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Spring football is nearly wrapped up. The one exception is the Georgia Bulldogs. They'll take care of that this weekend. But for the majority of the country, spring football is done in the books, including LSU. And we're going to get a recap of not only the Southeast, but possibly national scene with our next guest. He's a senior featured columnist for Saturday Down South. It's the one and only Connor O'Gara. Connor, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well. Let's start off, first of all, why hasn't Georgia had its spring game? Why are they the only one that's still out?
You know, I find myself asking that question, and I know that many people have already made the connections with all the off-season arrests that they just wanted to have their spring game on 420, but I'm not saying that. Other people have said that, not me. let the record show that. But, yeah, it is kind of weird. I wish that it was on the 13th, and we could just have it all on one weekend. I suppose everybody kind of wants their spotlight. Arizona State basically has their – I think they have their spring game in February just because – they can show off and do that because they have things like nice weather in Tempe. But for the rest of the SEC teams, it kind of feels like they all had this meeting and they're like, yeah, we're going to do it April 13th. You know, that way we'll have a couple of weeks to get ready for the draft because all these coaches, they go to the draft now. And so it's like a no-no that you can't have your spring game that weekend. But, yeah, I don't know. I have no reason really for it. Maybe they just want the attention and didn't want to necessarily be part of the, you know, the cluster that happens now with eight SEC teams playing their spring games on that weekend.
Connor, let's talk about an article that you had posted earlier this morning there on SaturdayDownSouth.com. And that's with spring ball all but over, a power ranking of the SEC quarterbacks. Tell us a little bit your kind of movers and shakers and who kind of surprised you during the spring ball that you thought, well, that kind of took me off guard, so to speak, good or bad.
So the guy that I did not expect to have in my top five but did was Kelly Bryant. And I understand that we still haven't seen Kelly Bryant play a game at Mizzou yet, but I think what we saw from him over the weekend is just sort of indicative of what we've seen from him all spring, and that is he is the guy at Mizzou. And I love that Mizzou has embraced this to the point where, yes, he's a grad transfer quarterback and he's never started a game for Mizzou, but Mizzou is treating him like he's the starter because everybody knows he's going to be the starter. Even at places like Ohio State, they're not coming out and naming Justin Fields the starter. It's like, all right, come on, let's be honest here. We know how this is going to happen. And I love that Mizzou has come out and really made Kelly Bryant the guy. And Kelly Bryant looks like he is embodying this leadership role that, quite frankly, Mizzou needs. This could be a really depressing offseason for Mizzou without Kelly Bryant. And, you know, if you look at the NCAA sanctions with this bowl ban that they're facing, and we still don't know what's going to happen all with that, and the fact that you lose a prolific guy in Drew Locke who could be a first-round quarterback, this could be a really tough offseason for Mizzou. But instead, Kelly Bryant has injected a lot of life, and we see, you know, with that Derek Dooley system, it looks like he's a pretty good fit, and it looks like he's going to be able to make a lot of those intermediate throws. So I like Kelly Bryant a lot more than I thought I would. He is at number five in my rankings. I have Joe Burrow at number four, and I know a lot of people are going to disagree with that, and they're going to throw a lot of the numbers out there, but this isn't just numbers. It's a guy that I would want to turn to and say, yeah, lead my team, be my quarterback. And Joe Burrow just checks a lot of those boxes for me. I love the way that he responds in the middle of a game. You know, you can go back to the UCF thing where he throws the pick six and he gets depleted, and then he responds and has, like, the game of his life. And there are little moments like that, and then you could look at the Texas A&M game where he just decides, I'm just going to keep the ball in my hand and run it the whole time, and I'm going to try and will my team to a victory in overtime. And I just love little moments like that from a quarterback. And I've talked about this before, about how I think Burrow is taking the next step. And I think that a lot of the pieces around him, with Joe Brady there, obviously coming in from the Saints, I just think that favors his situation really well. So those are kind of the movers and shakers that I think a lot of people would be surprised. But, yeah, I mean, I think at the top of the rankings, you wouldn't be surprised to see Tua at one and Jake Fromm at two. But I think the gap between them is a lot closer maybe than people realize. And seeing what we saw from Tua over the weekend, where he just did not look like the guy that we saw in the first 2 months of last season, much like how he played down the stretch as well, where he struggled, of course, in the national championship, struggled in the SEC championship before he was hurt. I think the gap between Jake Fromm and Tua is a lot closer than people are really giving it credit for.
We're on with Connor O'Gara. He is a senior national columnist for Saturday Down South. He's also a member of the Football Writers Association of America. Connor, out of the SEC, you talked about the quarterbacks, and I did find it also interesting, before we move on, a lot of Clemson people, a lot of his Clemson teammates came to support him during the spring game. Were you surprised that a lot of his former teammates came to give Kelly Bryant support at his new college? I'd never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, you're right. I can't remember ever seeing that. I mean, it's not like Clemson and Columbia are driving distance. I mean, it'd be different if he was, like, playing at South Carolina or something, and, you know, you can make the quick drive over and see him play. But, yeah, you see something like that, and you're like, oh, my God, that's amazing. I mean, no wonder this guy has been able to win over the locker room so far. People just like this guy, and people want to do right by him. And maybe this even goes back to Dabo saying after the fourth game of the season, you know what, I need to, if there's a way I can give this kid a chance to play and fulfill his dream, I need to do it because he's given a lot to this program. And that's a really, really good sign for a Mizzou fan. And obviously just being well-liked doesn't necessarily mean you're going to become a star quarterback, but this is one of the boxes that you have to check if you're a grad transfer quarterback, or you're going into a completely new situation. And let's be honest, you have to win over some people. You have to earn trust of the guys around you. It's so important in a sport like football, and especially at the quarterback position. I'm very encouraged by that, and I think that bodes really well for what he's going to be able to do this year. You don't look at something like that and say, okay, everybody's just going to hate him. Everybody's going to think that this guy is arrogant and that he's coming into this thinking that this is going to be easy and he's going to be able to move on to the NFL and do something like that. I think that you're not worried about that, and that's a good thing to kind of have out of the way and taken care of this early into this process.
Connor, speaking of quarterback transfers, let's stay on that. Jalen Hurts left Alabama, and now he's at Oklahoma, and everyone's kind of made the narrative that, oh, here's another transfer that's going to come in into Lincoln Riley's system. He's going to win a Heisman, and he's going to have him in the mix for a college football playoff. What was his performance like during the spring, and what are your thoughts on him being a fit at Oklahoma?
You know, the guy looked good, and I give Jalen Hurts so much credit because last year in that situation, you know, I thought he was going to quit the team. I really did, and I said this on multiple occasions that I thought that he was going to look at the situation that started the year where he's the backup, and I thought he was going to want to preserve a year of eligibility. With the new redshirt rule, he would have had a chance to do that and still play immediately this year. And instead, he decides, you know what, I'm going to stay with Dan Enos. I'm going to try and develop as a passer. I'm going to do what I am being knocked for. And people towards the end of last season said, you know what, he's nowhere close to Tua as a passer. And all he did last year was improve. And we saw that improvement come out on the biggest stage in the SEC championship. And, you know, it looks like the guy has learned a thing or two about just becoming somebody who can rely on his arm. The knock on him was that he was one read, he looked downfield. If Calvin Ridley was not open, he's going to tuck it and run. He wasn't going to look at any of those stud freshman receivers that Tua developed such a good rapport with. He was just going to run it himself, and that was just what limited him and why Auburn was able to defend him so well in that Iron Bowl and why ultimately they lost that game. But I give him so much credit for improving because it looks like he is a great fit in Lincoln Riley's offense, which is something that, you know, a year ago we wouldn't have been saying, but I think he's going to have all the tools possible to have a big season. He's still going to rely on his legs, don't get me wrong, but I think he's going to be able to make a lot of those big-time throws, and he's got so much talent around him. It's a great situation for Jalen Hurts to really have this big year, and who knows? You know, guys can get looks in the NFL for having different skill sets now compared to, you know, even just 5 years ago. So I love the decision, I love the development, and I think that there are big things ahead for him.
Connor, tell me, what were your thoughts on what occurred during the spring session here at LSU? We know, you know, they've added a wrinkle to their offense with the new assistant coach throughout spring practice and the spring game. Protection seemed to be still an issue, but obviously Derek Stingley Jr. is dynamic on the back end of the defense, and they look like they got some guys, some real hosses, so to speak, in the front seven. Your thoughts on what you saw from LSU during spring football?
Yeah, Stingley was the guy that just blew me away, and I wrote about this after the LSU spring game. Just watching him and hearing some of the stuff that was said about him, I mean, it all checks out. I don't know if enough people realize, and maybe part of this is because he's a longtime LSU commit. Guy's from Baton Rouge, and he's this five-star guy that everybody kind of checks off the box, and late in the signing process, you don't really look at a guy like him because he's been committed for so long, but like, the guy was the highest-rated cornerback recruit in the country since 2015. I mean, that's 4 years that we're talking about here. And everything we saw and heard from him in spring ball confirmed that. And hearing somebody like Marcus Spears saying that, you know, he's talking to guys at LSU's Pro Day, and Corey Raymond was saying if Derek Stingley was testing right now for the NFL, that he'd be a top 10 pick. And maybe a little bit of that is hyperbole, and I'll wait to see him play in an actual college game to get on board with that idea. But, like, that play that he made in the spring game really showed a lot of the skill set, because I think people underestimate how difficult it is to make a read downfield like that, where you're one-on-one, single coverage with a receiver, and you have to be able to turn your entire body, go up, jump in a jump-ball scenario, make that play, and then wrestle the ball away from a receiver, a 6'4 receiver. And to me, watching somebody who, you know, is 2 months into his college career do that was really, really impressive. And I love the prospect of him starting opposite side of Christian Fulton, who had a great year last year, and we expect big things out of this year. I think he's going to do some really good things. And if I'm an LSU fan, I think he's got all the capabilities of being the next great member of DBU.
Talking to Connor O'Gara, senior national columnist for Saturday Down South. Connor, I'm going to get you out of here with this, brother. I don't believe there was any college coach that had a better offseason than Les Miles. And I'll give you a brief recap, brother. Dr. Pepper, thespian, commercial of all time. He then gets Rick Ross to perform, and he gets on stage with Rick Ross at the spring game where they have a concert after the game, and then he just did like the Step Brothers skit with Bill Self, the Kansas head basketball coach. Are you surprised that Les has dominated the headlines in the offseason like he has by taking the job at Kansas?
You know, I'm not surprised that he's necessarily dominating the headlines after getting the job. Now, getting the job and becoming a Power 5 coach again, I didn't think that he would. I said last year, I'm like, let's stop pretending this is going to happen. Like, Les wants to act. He loves football, but I think this time in his life has passed him by, and everything that he's done, from the Rick Ross thing to, you know, Bill Self, to playing Flip Cup at the tailgate, I mean, like, the guy has just had this second wind, and it's pretty fun to see, because at a place like Kansas, I mean, goodness gracious, when was the last time they had a football coach making headlines for something that wasn't totally embarrassing? I mean, it's amazing to see him embrace this role at a place that has no history whatsoever. And there is an opportunity there for him to be able to capitalize on some of this. And I think that's it's just fun to see. It's fun to have Les Miles as a part of college football. There are so few, you know, I'll backtrack. There's nobody like Les Miles in college football. There just flat out isn't the grass-eating dude that he is. I just think that he's such a fresh personality to have in the sport, even though the narrative about him is, oh, you know, he's dated, his offense is dated, and this game has just sort of passed him by, and he's refused to develop. And we'll see. Time will tell if he's really going to be able to kind of go with the flow and adapt to this 21st century sport that it is now. But I love it for now, and it's been great. It's been great content and great entertainment in the offseason. I wish the best for Les, and I hope that he continues to prove me wrong, and that he does have this second win where, you know, maybe he's only there for 6-7 years or something like that, but he has a lot of fun in the process, and he has the occasional big national moment. It's great to see, and I am just relieved that we have somebody like Les dominating the offseason headlines like this.
Connor, I appreciate you coming on, making time for us always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Yep, sounds good. Appreciate it.
Connor O'Gara, featured national columnist for Saturday Down South, breaking down spring football for us across the Southeast and Midwest, and, of course, LSU. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up today's show on 103.7 The Game. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month here in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe digging. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you or a contractor that you have hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or even a garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. All diggers and demolishers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the individual to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. Call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Tremendous show in the books on this hump day edition of RP3 and Company. I want to thank all of our guests that made some time for us. The Big Red himself, Gerald Grunin from KLFY, talking a little bit about the importance of the Wally Pontiff Classic down there to the New Orleans area, its future, and also gave us his insight on some Saints, Cajuns, and LSU Tigers. I also want to thank Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers, coming on, recapping last night's Wally Pontiff Classic loss for LSU to the Cajuns, and gave us a preview of Florida series this weekend, which will be early, once again, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but you can listen to all three games live right here on 103.7 The Game. And also, our good friend, Marlon Favorite, former BCS national champion and Super Bowl champion, helping us break down LSU spring football as well as draft prospects for guys like Ed Alexander and Foster Moreau, who are not going to be first-round guys, but still guys that are going to be drafted and are climbing up the boards, according to Big Fave. And also, big thanks to Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South, recapping spring football across the Southeast and Midwest for us. Tomorrow, it's going to be a jam-packed show. Live in studio, STM state championship-winning coach, the one and only friend of the station, Danny Broussard, will be live in studio with me here tomorrow. We'll also have James Yasko on talking Astros. Can they keep the winning streak going? Can they go ahead and complete the series sweep of the Oakland Athletics? We'll talk more about that on tomorrow's show, as well as Les East from Crescent City Sports. He's going to give us a full recap of the David Griffin debut presser that's going on later today. He'll also break down the Saints season schedule. Plus, much, much more, including me apparently assaulting the equipment because I nearly just knocked the microphone down onto the ground.
Easy now. Simmer down now.
Simmer down.
Easy.
I got so amped up for tomorrow's show.
Knocking the microphone off.
Just knocking stuff around.
Come on now.
Just knocking stuff around.
Don't forget, tonight, live right here on 103.7 The Game, following Ben Love, he'll have his full three-hour Monty tonight, and then he'll move on. We'll have, I think, national programming for a couple hours in between after Ben, and then the Strohs, 9:10, 9:07.
No, not national programming. Five Guys, Stories, and Lies.
Then national programming.
That is correct. So we'll get Ben Love, the good brother. He'll be back, coming back from the Wally Pontiff Classic because he broadcast live there yesterday. We'll have Five Guys, Stories, and Lies on tonight, the return of that program. And then we'll have Astros on as well later. First pitch, you said 9:07?
Yeah, 9:07.
Woo! Over, under, I will know what the score is before I go to bed.
No chance. No shot.
No shot. Raymond will be waking up early to look at the Astros and how that game finished. Cody, tremendous job as always, brother.
Back at you.
Y'all be safe out there. Coming up next, Dan Patrick Show. After that, Jim Rome Show, followed by the Jordy Holberg Show with Jordy Holberg, the Blonde Bomber himself. And then, of course, Bumper to Bumper Sports. Y'all have a great day out there. Be safe. Talk to you tomorrow.